is Fight Back with Bob Fitrakis and Connie Goodell Newton on WCRS 98.3, 102.1.
And this is Bob Fitrakis, and as you know, Connie, today is the anniversary of the notorious Citizens United decision.
That's right. Today, as we're taping this show, it's January 20th, 2012.
And I just came in from 2 hours at the, and it's cold today, 2 hours out at the federal court where people came to occupy the courts. And the reason is to end corporate personhood and to say that money is not speech.
Money is speech. That's an interesting idea. How'd we ever arrive at that in this country, Bob?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Connie, because both of us are licensed attorney, and let's take our listeners through the history of how a legal fiction, and that's what they teach us in law school, what is a corporation? A legal fiction.
All right, so Bob's not going to give us the short answer. He's going to give us a history lesson going back to 1886.
With commentary by Connie Goodell Newton, who would have said, no way. If I was on the court, I would have said, pay some money, guys. And okay, so in 1886, in the Santa Clara versus Southern Pacific Railroad case, for the first time, the Supreme Court says that the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution applies to corporations. That is, corporations have the right to be equal protection under the law.
Now, wait a minute, Bob. The 14th Amendment was one that freed the slaves and granted people equal protection under the law, no matter what their skin color was or their ethnicity, right?
Yeah, this great absurdity of this. 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment are passed right after the Civil War. 13th Amendment frees the slaves. 14th Amendment has two famous provisions, equal protection under law, that it is related to race, and due process of law.
Right.
Everyone has to be treated the same by the government and the courts. There's a process involved, and everyone has to receive that due process.
So
now, at the same time in 1886, when blacks are being blatantly discriminated in the United States, particularly in the South, and they're being lynched, the mighty Supreme Court of the U.S. says, by God, we ought to do something to protect non-human entities, corporations.
So they extended that 14th Amendment to corporations.
But not to black people.
What do you mean? They didn't?
No.
I thought that was the whole point of it.
Nor to children. Well, it was, but...
Yeah. or women.
The court was more concerned...
Women and children, right?
The courts were more concerned, of course, with the rights...
Of corporations.
Of corporations, sure. And you're right, other whole groups in the society, as you pointed out, women and children, or as the court knew them then, chattel.
Women and children.
Chattel.
One
kind of property, my favorite word. So they were chattel, right? In fact, the court struck down, the Supreme Court of the United States struck down the early child labor laws, saying that essentially it violated the right to contract. Like, say you've got a cute four-year-old that I want to work 15 hours a day, chained to a machine.
That four-year-old should have the right to engage in contract and to, you know, be
parents,
allowed to work as
right?
much as they want.
The drunken parent should be allowed to contract out the four-year-old for some manual labor.
Ah, okay.
So, and then once you begin to say, and prior to this, you've got to really think about the corporations. The framers of the Constitution feared corporations because most of them were associated with the crown, the king, and they were these large entities that never, you know, died. So what they did is they left it up to the state. Each state to this day, you know, you've done some incorporations, nonprofit, etc. Each state issues a corporate charter. But say it's, you know, in the early parts of the United States, it's 1820 in Ohio. We want to build a bridge across the Scioto River or the Olentangy. And it's a private venture. What you would do is to go out and get, incorporate, and the charter would be for 5 years, and it would limit you to how much capital you could raise. You could only raise $3 million, and you would go out of existence in 5 years. Why? Because they worried that if you stayed around forever and raise unlimited amount of monies, you would buy up politics.
And you could compete with the government then.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. So is that if a company went outside its charter, say raised $6 million instead of $3 million, they would their charter would be pulled. They'd be killed instantly.
Mm.
But the Supreme Court decides that they're entitled to equal protection in 1886. Then in 1893, the U.S. Supreme Court gives constitutional rights to corporations involving the Fifth Amendment.
Okay.
This is the Noble versus Union River logging case. And essentially what the court says in 1893 is that a corporation cannot be deprived of property without due process of law. Remember, again, women, as you've pointed out, do not have due process of law.
Right.
They're deprived in divorces. Blacks, Native Americans, and Asian people don't have due process. But a corporation that's exceeded its charter has to be given due process of law.
Yeah, the Married Women's Property Act in a lot of states didn't pass until the 1890s when this was going on.
And then after that, the Supreme Court gives constitutional rights in 1906 to corporations involving the Fourth Amendment, Hal v. Hinkle. Protection against, quote, unreasonable search and seizure.
So the Fourth Amendment now applies to corporations as well?
Prior to that, it was thought that corporations, the government, could go in and seize their papers to see if they were doing criminal activity, right? That corporations were transparent. Because they were chartered,
they could be audited
by the state. Yes, yes. But now they're getting the rights to be protected like people under the Constitution. Mm-hmm. By the way, this is right off, and many people, including blacks, are still fighting for today that are routinely stopped and searched.
Well, yeah, we have DWB.
Driving While Black.
Driving While Black in Ohio. I mean, it happens. Well, I mean, especially if you're black and you're driving, that happens. Then you're pulled over, and people's rights are violated all the time. People's Fourth Amendment rights are violated all the time.
Unless you're a corporation, which in 1906 is protected in the Hale case. So 2 years later, the Supreme Court decides that if a corporation is charged criminally, it has a right not to some procedure by the state, an administrative body, which often, they used to go before administrative bodies because they were non-human entities. Mm-hmm. But 1908 in the Sixth Amendment, in the Armor Packing versus U.S., Armor Packing Company, you recall, they're the ones that made Spam, and occasionally human beings would slip into their meat vats and
ew,
rat droppings. They, when they were charged with criminal activity for having, you know...
like manslaughter, murder, putting people in
bad
their,
meat.
In their Spam or whatever.
They were given the right to a jury trial instead of going before an administrative body, which was the way to do it to this day, right? Even people often have to go through administrative trials or procedures before they can go to court.
Yeah.
But now corporations have the right to a trial by jury.
Well, in a criminal case, there are a lot of rights that are afforded to defendants that they don't have in administrative cases.
Sure,
you know,
and
the right to counsel.
You would know, you're a criminal attorney.
Yeah. So, you know, the rules of evidence, you are not required to incriminate yourself in a criminal case. So that means, you know, that maybe they wouldn't have to give evidence against themselves.
And if one, right,
which is
exactly.
Which is pretty serious. Because
so now they have
in
the
an
right
administrative
to
case, they would
their,
have to. Yeah.
To be protected from unreasonable search and seizure. And they don't have to testify against themselves, even if they're committing criminal activity chartered by the state and they're really a fiction.
Yeah.
So we now have the right of fictions and, to commit crime.
And the person who's actually committing that crime is questionable, because what is a corporation anyway? I mean, corporations should be classified as property that are owned by people.
So people are, right, exactly. People are dying from bad meat, and they've got all of these rights.
Yeah.
Criminal rights, and rights not to testify, rights to stonewall, rights that you could see humans having. But now these stock options that are the ownership shares have rights just like people.
And, you know, otherwise you could just dissolve the company. Say this company isn't functioning well because it's
violated the law, killing people.
It's violated the law. It's killing people. They shouldn't be allowed to do business. And instead, they now have the same rights as a criminal defendant. And, they're not required to dissolve
because of that act.
Good attorneys,
and they get... one juror to say they're not guilty, then, of course, they can go free. Okay, in 1922, Connie, the Fifth Amendment is applied in the Pennsylvania Coal Company case. That is, the court rules that corporations can take private property for public use. This is known as the taking clause.
Wait, how does that work? What does that actually mean, Bob?
Well, historically, a good question. Historically, this is how it works. Historically, say, the government has a public use. That would be like a park.
Okay, so it's similar to eminent domain then?
Yeah, it is. The taking clause really is eminent domain.
So this sets a standard saying
public use.
Uh-huh. So if I want to build a stadium, let's say I'm Nationwide or something, I want to build a stadium because I'm a person. so that's kind of what that's for. You can take private property, so you can basically take everybody else's land, everybody else's private property to build your huge stadium because it's for public use?
Yeah, a lot of these land grabs up on campus are corporations, they're redevelopment corporations. In the case of Ohio State, the city of Columbus simply granted the right of taking property to campus partners. So essentially a private corporation, a redevelopment corporation, has the power to take your private property and make private profit from it.
Well, and it would be interesting to follow the money trail there. Like, who's really profiting from that? Is there one rich guy at the top of the pyramid who is making out on that?
Or somebody who gave a lot of money to the city council for their re-election?
I mean, I want to know what's happening with that, because there are a lot of individuals who own small businesses. I remember the dry cleaning company 10 years ago that was put out of business by a campus partners. All the little dive bars on campus that were put out of business so that they could build up a mega, mini mall on High Street. All those people were put out of business. Now who's getting rich off of that?
And how does that figure into capitalism? If a private company can take another private company's property.
Yeah, that really seems like unfair competition. I mean, one of the great things about capitalism is that it is supposed to encourage competition, but that doesn't really seem like a fair competition if you're just like allowed to, roll over other people's businesses.
And there's a very famous event that happened in Detroit in the early 1980s. People were in Detroit. General Motors was moving out. The mayor of the city said, "We'll give you any place you want in this city if you'll stay to build a plant." So General Motors, which really didn't want to stay in Detroit, gave it a copy of a plant it had designed for Oklahoma, where rural Oklahoma.
Where it's really wide and open.
Sprawling, you're going to go out and buy farmland.
Okay.
And there's nothing there. So they hand them this design.
Let's put it in the middle of Detroit.
1,000 acres, right?
1,000 acres.
Acres of
land. Let's put it in Detroit instead
of
Oklahoma.
And most of the acreage is for a parking garage and parking spaces, right? Not for the factory itself. So what happens, of course, is because it's for a corporation that wants to make money, what happens there is General Motors says, we'll take this community called Pulltown. And we're going to take a break and tell you the rest of the story.
This is Fight Back with Bob Fetrakis and Connie Goodell Newton on WCRS 98.3, 102.1.
And here's what happens. So you've got this town, Pulltown. It's the only integrated neighborhood in Detroit. It's 40% black. It's stable. It's Pulltown because all these Polish people who had moved over, they love their houses. They sweep their alleys. They scrub mm-hmm. their bricks.
The little old ladies are going out exactly. sweeping the street with their brooms,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, yeah. And they've welcomed black people. So there's, it's, nice it's of one of three integrated ethnic black communities in America.
Great.
Urban anthropologists yeah. study it. Because
people get along there. And, they don't hate each other, right?
Yeah, right.
That's
and,
pretty wild.
And here's
yeah.
what they found out. Is that if a black person moves into your neighborhood and you don't panic and all move out, then they become integrated into your neighborhood, and then another
the
one...
The property values don't go down.
Exactly.
Great.
And
okay.
they look out for each other and they get to know each other.
So instead of white flight, you have white people staying and hanging out and having block parties
exactly.
with the black people. It sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah, so it works fine. But what happens is then for General Motors... the city of Detroit simply comes in on behalf of General Motors and destroys, you know, a couple thousand homes, church, hundreds of businesses, including these ethnic shops, you know, these old-time Polish store, you know, that made meat or had vegetables, and essentially just comes in and destroys this ethnic enclave that's integrated to give to General Motors for a parking lot, essentially. And then the General Motors factory there closes down in 10 years.
Oh,
so
man.
Now the whole area is a ghost town. Why? Because we can take people's private property for public use for a private corporation. And that right was given to them by the Supreme Court in 1922, and the Pennsylvania Coal Company case.
So then what happened?
Well, then we had the whole New Deal collapse. America was more progressive in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. But then...
It didn't end there.
No.
Let's just say that.
And then it was quiet for a while. But then in 1970, the Seventh Amendment in the Ross case is applied to the corporation. The right to jury trial in a civil case.
Okay.
So instead of the state holding a procedure, an administrative, and revoking your charter because you've abused it, and you having to justify why you should keep your charter when you haven't done what you said, now you've got the rights of people in both criminal cases and civil cases, and a right not to be tried by a judge, but a right to be tried by a jury.
Well, in a lot of cases, you know, you can choose whether you want the judge or the jury. So you can choose which one's going to be more sympathetic.
But historically, the right to jury trials were only for human beings. Now, corporations have the right to a jury trial.
Well, life's looking pretty good if you're a corporation, huh?
If you're an unnatural entity, it's instead of a natural born citizen, you've now got, as an unnatural person that can live forever, these rights.
Oh.
But then the
celebrate
real
the
shock.
Yes.
Or take a wooden stake and find a corporate vampire that's sucking your community dry and sneak up onto them. Like Connie Goodell Newton, corporate vampire
slayer.
See, she's not denying it. Okay, but then it gets real evil. In 1976, Buckley versus Valeo, one of the decisions that will live in infamy. The Supreme Court of the United States says political money is the equivalent of speech.
So they were extending the First Amendment to corporations there. I mean, I can see like the First Amendment, but, you know, letting corporations like make public statements or something like that. But
you
why?
You can't restrict how much money someone can spend on an independent or their own campaign.
Yeah, that's
so. If I'm
just
a billionaire, if I'm Bill Gates, I can spend $50 billion of my own money as speech.
So money is speech now. So, you know, just like the clothes you wear or something as being a personal expression, how you spend your money is the equivalent of speech, or who you support with politics within your...
You have the right to free speech, and
money.
That includes the right to spend unlimited amount of monies unless you're coordinating with a candidate. So that's 1976. Political money is equivalent of speech. In 1976, the same year, in the Martin Linden supply case, protection against double jeopardy. In the old days, if a corporation was doing something evil and you took them to court and they continued to do something evil, they weren't afforded double jeopardy. You could come back and try to make the case if, you know, it was harming the community, people were dying, they were poisoning. Now, if they're acquitted of those charges, you can never go back and look at their practices. For example, if Ford has a Pinto that explodes and they're tried...
In a consumer protection case or
no,
in a
criminal case?
In a criminal case.
Right. Or consumer protection case, you then can't come back and retry them if you have new evidence. Historically, because they weren't people, they weren't covered by double jeopardy.
Yeah, that's interesting.
If new evidence was found, you could, in fact, retry them on that claim. But then here we are, 1 year ago, 2010.
The law is still developing, ladies and gentlemen. We're still extending the law to give corporations more constitutional rights as people.
Citizens United comes forward. And in this case, it's a massive expansion of Buckley versus Valeo. This gives corporations the right. In Buckley versus Valeo, you had to set up actually a corporate pact, an account for who gave you the money.
Okay.
Right. The big thing in Buckley was transparency.
Okay.
You had a right to money being speech, but you had to say who was speaking.
So that seems like a fair limitation.
It's incredibly unfair class-wise, but at least you know where the money's coming from.
Okay. So
now,
what happened in Citizens
United? Unlimited money for or against any candidate in any election, and you don't have to say where it comes from. It can be secret.
No transparency?
No transparency.
Huh.
So as long as you're a corporation and you have your own PAC, independent PAC, you're not, and again, the question is, as long as you're not coordinating with the candidate, now you could be the candidate's best friend, the CEO of the company could have drafted the candidate, but as long as you're not coordinated, you can secretly bundle unlimited money and no one knows where it comes from.
Wow, I wish I had like a fairy godmother like that who would just be like, hey, everybody, vote for Connie. And let's gather up a bunch of money for her.
So,
right?
Yeah,
no,
they could. I mean,
yeah.
Somebody, for example, and I wish this were the case, say your father ran a corporation and he really wanted you to be elected. And you saw him and said, I'm thinking about running at Thanksgiving. Suddenly, a super PAC's formed, and it's got $100 million, and it drafts and promotes you for whatever office you want. And you say hi to your dad, you talk to your dad regularly, but as long as you're not coordinating, and your mom could be the campaign manager, perfectly fine over Citizens United. It ends 100 years of saying Congress has the authority to regulate federal elections, and as part of that authority, that the money is not unlimited. Prior to Citizens United, you could put limitations on where the money came from. It couldn't come right out of the corporate treasury, and it had to be transparent. We had to know who gave you that money. Now it's secret and unlimited.
Wow.
And even with Buckley, 90% of the money came from the top 1%. Now more than 90%, and it's secret.
Yeah. So that's really concentrating a lot of power in the hands of people who have money.
And again, the people today, there's really two demands that were made by Occupy, you know, the court courthouse.
Yeah.
First of all, that we need an amendment, move to amend, that we need an amendment in the U.S. Constitution that simply says corporations are not people. And we need another amendment that says speech is not money.
Yeah.
And I think Connie's agreeing with it. So part of the problem is well over 90% of all the money is now coming from 1%. So when you hear the Occupy movement talk about the 1% and 99%, and you also have Mitt Romney, you know, saying, you're needlessly dividing people along class lines. The point is, we're already divided.
Yeah.
There's already this 1% that has unlimited secret money. Most of us will never own a large transnational corporation or be its CEO.
Yeah.
You know, the average person, when you ask the average person how much middle class person, how much they would give to a candidate, they generally say about $100. I don't know whether you make donations to the candidate.
I probably wouldn't be able to afford $100, but if I really liked somebody, I might give them like $50, $40. I don't know.
And a nice cookie, gluten-free.
Yes.
Which Connie sometimes has.
I would endorse them on my Facebook.
Uh-huh. So, yeah, normal people don't have super PACs. And, right, this stuff is being lampooned by Colbert, Steve Colbert, constantly.
Mm-hmm.
Just every night you can watch Colbert, who has created a super PAC, which, by the way, is now being run by John Stewart. So John Stewart, again, is running Colbert's super PAC, and the name of the super PAC is definitely not coordinating with Colbert super PAC.
Okay, well, God bless comedians, I have to say. You know, if it wasn't for comedians being involved in politics, I really think a lot of things wouldn't come to light or get addressed.
Right.
So, thank you.
You're getting far better news from Colbert.
Absolutely.
Than you are from the corporate media, which all has super PACs. You know, General Electric, which owns, and Comcast, which owns NBC News, Disney, which owns ABC, and of course, Time Warner, Turner, AOL, EMI, etc., that owns, of course, CNN and the other news. And then, you know, Rupert Murdoch and Fox, you know, I mean, we know where that most of that money comes from. It comes from right-winger and well-known hacker Rupert Murdoch.
Mm.
So, this is the anniversary of Citizens United, and we occupied the courthouse.
Great. Well,
what's next? What should the Occupy movement do, Connie?
I don't know. Keep on keeping on. Actually, how about speaking with words and signs and your bodies, occupying certain spaces? You know, we don't have all the money that big corporations have, but we do have our voices. We have our solidarity. And, you know, we have our bodies to take up space. And I think a lot of the Occupy movement is about that. You know, we have power. We have to use it. And, you know, it's very difficult when the owners of super PACs are the same people who build prison warehouses to put us in. But, you know, we have to educate ourselves as to what's going on and gather together and do something about it.
This is Bob Fitragis with Connie Goodell Newton occupying the studios of WCRS and telling you, join the Occupy movement. Stand up and say, corporations are not people. They're actually soulless entities, vampires that walk among us, sucking our substance. Corporations are not people, and money is not speech.
And we're not property either. this is Fight Back with Bob Fitragis and Connie Goodell Newton on WCRS 98.3 102.1.